From meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at scaredmonkeysradio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, this is a special podcast edition of the Dana Pretzer Show, and on the line is our sister blogger, Blink, from Blink on Crime. Good afternoon, ma'am. How are you?
Good afternoon, Dana. You look different in the daylight.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, exactly. You better close the blinds real quick here, because I'm not sure how I should take this. Anyway, you haven't been on the show for a while. We got lots to talk about in connection with the Harrington matter, but I want to hear a little bit about you and what you've been up to.
Oh, I'm back to school. I'm back to school full-time. My private practice in criminal investigation analysis is very busy, but went back to school thinking, completing my master's in apparent behavior and those kinds of icky things that a lot of people don't like to study, and, you know, have two kids finishing high school and going to college. It's been crazy busy, but, you know, all good.
How do you find the time?
Sometimes I fake it. As honest as I can be right now,
yeah.
I deferred school until next week.
Yeah.
So I was able, fortunately, to be able to do that. But other than that, you know, in the beginning of spring and summer, I really was hiding in my study.
If
you're not bleeding from an artery, do not bother mom.
There you go. You know, you can buy cardboard cutouts of yourself, and you could
fatheads. I know.
You could give that to the family, and they could, you know, take it to events and stuff, and mom could be there. Anyway.
Well, I'm kind of loud, so I don't know. They come with audio. They wouldn't fall for it otherwise.
You and I have talked about this topic for many years, actually, and going back to 2011, you actually wrote about this, but now we have a DNA connection between the death of Morgan Harrington and the disappearance of the Graham girl, Hannah Graham.
Right.
And what's going on here? This is a big story.
It is, and it's also connected to a rape in 2005, an unsolved rape, which was also a brutal assault on a national gal who I believe was here on work study or school study that was unsolved. So there was a DNA profile available in that case, but because Jesse Matthew was never arrested for a felony in Virginia, let me say that differently, he actually was, and as you'll see in the piece that I wrote, because of the fact that felony pled to a misdemeanor, his DNA was not collected. And that was in June of 2009, so it was prior to Harrington's disappearance, but after the 2005 assault. So that database would have hit had he been convicted of that felony.
Let's just replay that for a second so everyone understands. He was arrested but pled down to a misdemeanor?
Yes. He was in an altercation in June 2009, actually a Charlottesville attorney, a guy by the name of Eric Wilkie. And from Wilkie's perspective, who was found by the way of court records, he didn't approach media or anything like that, but because he's listed as the complainant, as you know, it'll either be something like that or it'll be the responding officer. Apparently, through some sort of, kind of situational road rage, Mr. Matthew, I guess he kind of T-boned Mr. Wilkie, and as Matthew approached him, and he said he was, I believe, calling law enforcement, Matthew reached in the car, grabbed his phone, punched him in the face twice, and split his lip. Matthew returned to his vehicle, I guess was there for some time, and Wilkie described him as remorseful.
Mm-hmm.
According to Wilkie, he said that he only pressed charges at all because he was asked to by the Commonwealth attorney, and wanted to make sure that, you know, whatever, I guess, medical bills he, you know, incurred as a result were taken care of. He then stated that he got a call from the Commonwealth asking if he'd be willing to drop the assault and battery and grand larceny charges if Matthew pled to a misdemeanor trespassing. And he said that he would. So had Matthew been stood trial and convicted, if, yeah, or pled to the guilty charges, which were the grand larceny and the assault and battery, his DNA by Virginia law would have been entered into their database, and it would have been a hit to the 2005 unsolved rape and assault.
Wow. You know, and it goes back to DNA, state law, up here provincial law or federal law, as far as the push for violent crimes, no matter if they're serious or not, pled down or not, that DNA should be collected. But then, you know, anyway, it's too late and something.
It's a problem. Yeah. It's a problem. And you know, I have seen cases where I reference this in a moderated post on my site. I reference it where I have seen cases where DNA has been extracted, and say, for as an example, a person was either found not guilty or they pled to a lesser, and their DNA ended up, you know, erroneously in the database, but had a hit to another crime, and that was then suppressed.
Yeah.
And I've seen it the other way.
Good grief.
Where, you know, out of an abundance of caution and public safety, they've been able to use it. But it is a problem.
Yeah.
Backlog is a huge problem, especially in Virginia.
Yeah. Blink from Blink on Crimes here, and I encourage you to check out her blog at blinkoncrime.com for more on this. Let's learn a little bit more about Jesse Matthew.
He is really, he's a local. He grew up in the Albemarle County area. According to his grandmother, Christine Carr, he spent a great deal of time with her as his mother was working. His father has had some significant substance abuse issues and some, you know, in and out of incarceration. He's actually living in a boarding halfway house facility now. He has a sister who is 3 years younger than her. Her name is Latasha. Goes by a nickname, Nikki, but they're generally in that area. He went to two high schools. He went to, I want to say, Charlottesville and then Monticello, graduated from that, and was the 1999, I believe, Charlottesville Athlete of the Year. He was a state champion wrestler. He was awarded a Division I NCAA football scholarship to Liberty University, where he was on the roster for 3 years. And on the day that a rape allegation by another student was levied against him, if you can believe this for a coincidence, Dana, it was October 17th,
jeez,
2002. So it was 7 years to the day prior to Morgan Harrington's disappearance. He actually left the campus that day. His scholarship was revoked, and found himself then at Christopher Newport University playing football again, although he never made the roster. He was there maybe a week. There was another rape allegation, and that was that.
Blink from Blink on Crimes here. Without focusing too much on him, and we'll get into him in a little bit, I want to remind the audience a little bit about Morgan Harrington and her case. You and I have covered it many times, you more so on your site, but let's refresh the audience's memory a little bit.
Sure. Morgan Harrington went missing from the John Paul Jones Arena the evening of October 17th, 2009. And it was under, I don't know that I would refer to them as nefarious, but she was injured. They believe that she was under the influence of some kind, and she was denied access back into JPJ. And it's presumed, because of the conversation that she had with her friends outside, that she had secured a ride. It has always been our theory, considering, I mean, I know it sounds simple, but, you know, Occam's razor usually does win out. If she's walking across the bridge, thumbing a ride, she's not a hitchhiker. She had secured some form of transportation, as she told her friends. It's presumed that she got into a vehicle to some degree. I can't say if she did that willingly, because the evidence on scene reflects somebody that was attacked in as much as two places, based on my knowledge of where her purse was found and where other belongings of hers were found. So about November 5th, 2009, a shirt that she had been wearing was displayed on a bush, which is directly across within, you know, visual acuity of where Mr. Matthew worked at the time at the Martha Jefferson House. It's displayed on a bush. Charlottesville police are called. Eventually it's tested, and it is found to definitely be Morgan Harrington's shirt, and it contains his DNA. That's where, if you recall, Sketch, you know, the composition, the attachment to the 2005 Fairfax case, and the DNA have established this gentleman. They knew his face per Sketch, you know, to the extent that you can, his physical description, and that at that point he was definitely tied to the Harrington disappearance. And at the time, she had not been found.
Now we go forward, and we could spend.
Let me just correct that. I'm wrong. It was not tested right away. Mm-hmm. It was tested much later, and that testing came back in July of 2010. Morgan was located and recovered on Anchorage Farm on January 26th of 2010.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, when we'll go forward to the testing, but that's okay. We've corrected that. Let's talk a little bit about Hannah Graham and that case.
Hannah's case looks like, you know, part and parcel of Morgan's. She had been separated from friends. It appears that was willing. I've heard people say that she appeared intoxicated. The video I've seen with her doesn't show me that. But I believe they're making that assumption based on maybe their knowledge of what she had. She meets up with Mr. Matthew at the end of the downtown mall, and allegedly he put his arms around her, and they went to a bar called Tempo, had a drink. The owner of that establishment, as you can imagine, refutes that he served a minor alcohol,
yes.
And that she hadn't been seen in the bar, but leaving the area. So, I mean, between you and me and the, you know, the rest of the free world that's listening to this, that certainly is a CYA statement. But I do applaud them and him for coming forward in the first place, saying, you know, this guy was in our facility. And, you know, basically she disappears from there.
Now,
nobody has seen her again.
I'm going to ask you this question a couple of times now, and then probably near the end of the show, with the DNA tie-in to the two cases and others, is that enough? A lot of lay people don't understand the process, but is that enough to take this
no.
to court?
No, it's definitely not. You know, we talk a bit about, and we have in the past on several cases, and I disclose I am discoverable to a point
right.
in this case, so I wouldn't be able to discuss those kinds of things.
Right.
But what I can say is, you know, the CSI effect is alive and well, and you can see that in, you know, whether it's somebody responding to comments on my blog or on Scared Monkeys or so forth, they're like, you know, what do you mean they have DNA? Arrest them!
Yeah.
You know, that's really the thought process, and I respect and I, you know, I feel for that, because it does seem like it should be that easy, right? You have a scary individual, he's tied to it. Unfortunately, you know, what comes with the CSI effect is fantastic defense attorneys, and, you know, prosecutors have to work to present, you know, a litigation that's going to result in a successful prosecution. Personally, for this jurisdiction, the fact that he has been charged with abduction and intent to defile, for me, is huge. Because traditionally they're very, they're indictment wanton, and they are conservative, and they weren't in this case. A shout out to Chief Tim Longo, because he is the antithesis of how Virginia State Police responded to the Harrington case. I mean, to the point where he's, you know, he's gotten a little, what's the word I'm looking for? A little feedback and criticism because of, you know, the level of his emotion and veracity in what he's saying. And personally, had they not gone the loop of the downtown mall and gone to every business and did the knock and talk and just went in and interviewed and subpoenaed all of that footage, I don't know that we would even know who Matthew is today. Because, as you'll see in the piece that I'm publishing, Coy Barefoot, who is an adjunct professor at UVA, also well-known Charlottesville gentleman, media person, was on Wolf Blitzer the other night on CNN and said, I just talked to a bouncer that said, we kicked him out for 2 months. Why? Because he has a pattern. He likes white, upper middle class, preppy looking girls, and he'll stand here and he'll try to hook up with the drunkest one. And I thought to myself, Dan, I thought, okay, wouldn't the follow-up question to that be, did that bouncer call the Virginia State Police when the sketch came out and say, you know what, we have a guy that looks just like that targeting, these are his words now, white, preppy, attractive young girls. He didn't. What's wrong with that picture?
Yeah, exactly. Blink from
my daughter's not going to be going to UVA, I can tell you that right now.
Yeah, exactly. Blink from Blink on Crimes here, and I encourage you to check out her blog page for more on this case. Without giving away too much of your new article that's coming up here, I want to ask you about Trevis Poole.
Trevis Poole was 25 years old in the time frame of 86, 87. The accomplishment and the size and scope of that coke operation is nothing short of spectacular for the time frame. If you look back to I couldn't even tell you what some of the Casino, you remember that movie?
Yep.
Like things along those lines where it was like the 80s heyday or what have you. That's pretty much what was going on. There were 24 indictments, and he served 6.5 years of a 10-year sentence with some siblings, family members. I will note that two gentlemen that were also arrested in that probe and served time are dead. One was missing since 2004, a guy by the name of Jesse Hicks. Another gentleman, I believe, committed suicide, guy by the name of Wade Austin when he was arrested. But three of the people that were arrested were UVA starting football players as well. So Poole gets out, and he is in partnership with a woman by the name of Cynthia Herndon, who owns Access Taxi, who Matthew goes to work for. That's important because my investigation into, where are those vehicles and what happened to the sale, because if he's using that, auspice as a way to lure victims, that's really important.
Absolutely, right? Yep.
Every car that she owned is junked.
Hmm.
There's no VINs attached to any of the financial, vehicle identification numbers. I speak in acronyms all the time. It's a very bad habit. I apologize. There was none of that in any of the paperwork. And as you'll see, I'm posing the question, there was a bit of, cab fire-ness going on in, the 2011 arena, and one of those fires occurs at what I would call like a crisis intervention center, mm-hmm. of which an employee of that is listed as a roommate in our research for Jesse Matthew at the last apartment that he lived. Whether it's connected or not, I can't say right now. I can say that there's underpinnings of documents that look like that, for instance, garnishments by an insurance company. You know what I'm referring to. Yep. That's one of the ways you get to that place is when you see, $16,000 from your insurance company, a garnishment. Generally speaking, that has to do with property destruction that was not covered.
Yep. Oh, no, absolutely. And just think about it. Think about the investigation. The girls last seen walking away, potential of a cab coming around picking them up. Anyway, we could take that 15 different directions. And it is something that we all want to know, but it will take some time to know about this. But I want to ask you, Blake, from Blink on Crime, about the family. I have interviewed the Harringtons here on this show, and I'm curious on their reaction to what's been going on.
I don't know that they'll mind me saying this, but I knew the Saturday before they were alerted, and I texted them because I actually had some misinformation. My information was that they had been told, which, you know, yeah. You know how that goes. But at any rate, so I knew that they knew, and I didn't know what to expect. And what I can tell you is twofold. One, you won't find a more graceful set of people and family than the Harringtons in the face of this tragedy and what has been done to their daughter. Years ago, I remember in a conversation I had with Dr. Harrington, and I told him, I said, one of the things I want you to consider is, you know, as active as you are, and this was probably within a month or two after Morgan had been located, I said, as active as you are, you need to consider, you know, your health and Jill's health, and you need to consider the phase that you're going to enter when this becomes prosecutorial. It's very different. Yeah. When you attach, you know, your grief to a face or a person, it changes. And that has been my experience. That's not to say that it happens for everyone, but in every case I've ever worked on, it has. And what they didn't, you know, their reaction was, okay, we're glad he's off the street. We're still in shock. Yeah. We're not sure how to process. Because it's like, you know, evolving. He's under investigation, I can tell you right now, on 12 other cases. Do I believe he's involved in 12 other cases? No, I don't. But you know how this works. Somebody, you know, law enforcement's got to look. They'd be derelict.
Absolutely.
If they didn't. And I personally am aware of a case, in my strong opinion, was a victim that got away and then refused to talk to police, which, you know, I've never been, thank God, a victim of like that. So I will never judge anybody that decides that they can't, you know, go forward out of fear or what have you. I would hope that they would, but I understand it. But, you know, one thing I can tell you investigatively, 1,000% certainty, is that if he's got this many, you know, allegations, and he's got now two what I believe will be eventual homicide victims, I can promise you he has three times that who have not come forward.
Yeah.
Or who have, you know, gotten away, or who just narrowly missed. This offender, who, and I have not been able to exclude that he had help.
Yeah.
I'm of the opinion that, in my mind, you know, when you talk about Morgan Harrington's placement of her remains, and you talk about that farm, and you talk about traversing it, that's a statement placement in my mind. And it is incongruent with the way folks are describing him. You know, I've heard everything from, you know, gentle giant, and, you know, he's slow. He had special education classes. He had tutors. Well, my first question is to the NCAA eligibility requirements, which I failed to get because they're private records. They would not allow me to have them. But how did he qualify? Because you need to qualify. You need specific SATs. You need specific GPAs. You need all of those things to qualify for a Division I scholarship. That's just a fact.
Right.
So if everybody's saying, you know, he was compromised, oh, it couldn't be him. And I'm hearing this a lot. That is a continuous theme. He's not that smart. He would never. I tend to believe when I hear, you know, four, five, and six people that don't have a dog in the fight, if you will, that's their perception. So for me, how do you go 14 straight years at a minimum, you know, basically untethered, running through this community, you know, with rape allegations left and right, or physical altercations, or, you know, other, you know, crimes of record where he's not registering his vehicles? We could not find a single asset in his name going back 15 years.
You know,
a red flag.
Absolutely. It's a huge red flag. And, not comparing the cases, but people didn't think Ted Bundy was involved in what he was involved in either at the start. It was Ted, and he was such a nice guy. So,
right.
This is huge.
There's plenty of that. There's plenty of people, Dana, that are saying it could never be. And, you know, and I'm talking both sides of the race. I'm saying, you know, a woman that she didn't want, not want her identity known, but she literally said, you know, I tutored him. And I'm telling you, this is not a person that can formulate the kind of situation that he's being accused of. And when I hear, again, when I hear that, not to, you know, not to sharpen the point, but when I hear that, I generally think, okay, well, that's a missing component in this scenario. So what does that mean to me? I think somebody else is involved.
Absolutely. And we'll learn more from Blink at blinkoncrime.com, the hardest working gal in the crime fighting business. Listen, thank you, my dear.
Thank you. Good to talk to you. Take care, Dana.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.